So you want to check that?
Right, no, it's on.
Don't raise it down the ground like that.
Yeah.
Yep. You watch him go back.
Yeah.
Good evening, councillors. Good evening, staff, and good evening to our community members in the audience. Welcome to this council meeting number 18, held today on Monday the 28th of August 2017, the time being 5:30. I'd like to remind all persons in attendance that it is council policy to record council meetings. The audio recording of this meeting will be made available to the public on council's website for a period of 12 months. In accordance with council policy, I now ask staff to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed.
Thank you, Mr. General Manager. At this stage, I would like to acknowledge and pay respect to the Tasmanian Aboriginal community as the traditional and original owners and continuing custodians on the land in which we meet tonight, and acknowledge elders past and present. Attendees tonight as myself, Councillor Wass, Deputy Mayor Councillor Reek, Councillor Atkinson, Councillor Berry, Councillor Fox, Councillor Chadden, Councillor Percy, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Grace and Councillor Winter. From staff we have our General Manager Mr Arnold, our Deputy General Manager Mr Ferrier, our Chief Financial Officer Mr Breen, our Executive Manager Information Services Mr Malt, our Manager Environmental Services Mr Dool, our Manager Development Services Mrs Tyler Moore, our Project Manager for Kingston Park, Mr Loxley, our Project Manager for Capital Works, Mr Reed, and our illustrious typist and recorder of minutes, and our Manager of Governance and Property Services, Mr Smee. We'll move on to page 2. There are no apologies. Confirmation of minutes of Council Meeting number 17 held on the 14th of August, moved by Councillor Percy and seconded by Councillor Fox, that the minutes of Council Meeting number 17 held on the 14th of August be confirmed. I'll ask councillors to vote. Those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? That is carried unanimously. Workshops held since the Council Meeting on the 14th of August. There was one on the 21st of August on climate change. Councillors, at this stage, I'll ask if there's any councillors that wish to indicate any declarations of interest. There are none?
Yes.
Yes. Councillor Wiener?
Just the notice of motion in relation to Kingston, Osborne Esplanade, Kingston Beach. I own a property on that street. They'll be staying in the room.
So you're just noting that you have a property in Osborne Esplanade and you'll be staying for discussions. Thank you, Councillor Wiener. We'll move on to page 4. Questions on notice from the public. From the last meeting, there was a question raised from Mr. Sharinga re the sale of council-owned land, and an officer's response by Mr. Smee on pages 4 and 5. Questions without notice from the public. Are there any questions without notice? Mr. Burgess? There's a microphone there. No, there's one there, Flora. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Today's Mercury records the proposal from the state government to enact legislation relating to projects that they will call in, so they claim, from local government, classifying them as major projects of significance. There's a quotation in that Mercury article from the Minister, and I would like to quote that and follow it with a question. The Minister is going on to point out that there are a number of projects that government consider that they are considering for that purpose. But to be clear, these laws won't apply to skyscrapers, Mr. Gutman said, and he goes on to say, we believe that local communities, through their councils, should determine what the appropriate building height is for their community. That being the case, would council seriously consider appealing to the Planning Commission to amend the requirements of the state planning provisions, which changed the building height maximum in general residential areas to 8.5 metres, to potentially restore the very sensible 5-metre height limit that applied on the, for example, the Blackmans Bay foreshore block? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burgess. I'll ask Mr. Ferrier to respond. Mr. Ferrier?
Through the chair, council will be soon preparing its local provision schedule. I can't say at this stage how we'll be dealing with heights of buildings in relation to the recommendations we make to council. It's always been this council's view that we favour a 5 metre limit for permitted developments along the coast or adjoining the waterways. We may well include that within the proposed local provision schedule, but it's a bit early to tell at this stage. So I'd probably just like to bear that question in mind and review it over the coming months as we prepare the local provision schedule in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Ferrier. Any further questions from our community? Being none, thank you, Mr. Burgess. We'll move on to page 6, questions on notice from councillors. Question from Councillor Winter regarding Kingston Beach swing set and a response from Mr. Cardinal, our Assistant Works Manager. Question from Councillor Winter regarding a Legat conference and a response on pages 6, 7 and 8 from the General Manager. Also from Councillor Winter, the 2016 Councillor's underlying result and a response from Mr. Breen, Financial Officer, and long-term financial plan review from Councillor Winter with Mr. Breen also responding. Questions without notice from councillors. Are there any questions without notice? Councillor Grace?
Yeah, I note, Mayor, in your communications, you and the General Manager met with a developer.
I'll cover that in when we get to that.
Yeah, but I want to ask a question. Can you advise when, and as council, to my knowledge, has not made any decision on selling any of that land if it was relating to purchase of land? That's my question. Was it in relation to purchasing of the Kingston Park development? Because at this stage, we haven't said that we're going to sell it. There has been no consultation about selling that land, as far as I'm aware, and I'm not aware of it. So
the main part centred around the Kingston Park project, and he was happy with the project that council was proceeding with, and there was no land either pinpointed, identified, that he or she wished to or not wished to buy.
Because my question is, I would hope that this will be open and transparent all the way, this development, because i.e. Kingborough Council will be the developer and the development application be through the council, so we need to be mindful.
Land purchase will be open to all and sundry.
Thank you, Mayor. My second question is to you, Mayor. I've been asked to raise from the concerned residents of the Snug and Lectrona, from the group down there, and they're raising questions regarding a paper that was sent out to the people of Snug regarding the playground equipment. And we discussed that some months ago at council level, and it relates to that development on the corner of Beach Road and Channel Highway. And their question is, will you be replying to their correspondence sent to you, Mayor?
They, in response to that, Councillor Grace, they wrote in about the play centre that is, that the play equipment which was earmarked, if you like, for and brought back, we brought back to councillors at the Snug Park, and staff will be contacting that group.
So that group will have an input into the...
They certainly will.
And will you be replying to their correspondence personally?
I have responded to them, and it was not about the land at Channel Highway.
Well, as from today, nobody's received any correspondence from you, so that's my question. If Mayor, nobody's received any correspondence. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Winter?
Yes, thanks, Mayor. My question is to you. In the 2 weeks since you revealed that you voted against Hobart City Council's motion on Australia Day at the July Legat meeting, have you reconsidered your claim that your vote accurately represented Council's position? And if not, how do you justify that you'll vote against the motion.
In that case, I do believe it is justified. The council made a decision not to support the Hobart motion. The Hobart City Council sent a motion to us and that was lost. And a subsequent motion went through. Councillor Atkinson?
If I'm able to continue to ask questions.
Sorry.
My question is to the General Manager. At the Legat July meeting, numerous topics were covered, including public transport services, local government rates and fees, flood mitigation, immunisation programs, Fluoridation Act. Did the Mayor seek your advice on any of these agenda items before he cast Kingra's vote on them? Specifically, did he ask whether Council had an established position or what your thoughts were on how he should vote?
Mr. Arnold?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Winter, from memory, the Mayor asked me about many of the motions, and where time permitted, we had brief discussion before the Mayor voted.
So, when did you become aware of how Council voted on those items?
Mr. Arnold?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The most recent time was when the Mayor responded to questions to you, Councillor Winter, because I'd previously responded to a question you'd raised and indicated that I had checked the Legat website, which doesn't record how councils vote on any of the motions. I had then telephoned the CEO of Legat to discuss that with her, and I included in my answer that it was going to be raised by her at the next general meeting and seek the member council's consideration to change that so that the voting of all individual councils is recorded at all future general meetings and the AGM.
So when you say that's... So you... To summarise, at the biggest meeting of the Local Government Association of Tasmania for the year, you didn't know, as General Manager of this council, how council voted at that meeting until I asked a question or notice about it directly to the Mayor 4 weeks after the meeting.
Mr. Arnold?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, Councillor Winter, and let me qualify that by saying that I suspect most General Managers in the state that attended the conference would give the same answer, because short of watching the Mayor press the button on the voting tablet that was provided for each Mayor or delegate, that's the honest answer.
Okay. My next question is to the Mayor. When the Australia Day motion was slightly amended by Hobart City Council and Brighton Council, you were seated next to multiple councillors, including a former mayor. So when the motion was slightly amended at the conference, did you seek any of their input before you decided to fundamentally change what council's predetermined position was?
Firstly, I wasn't sitting beside Councillor Berry. Councillor Berry was about five people along from him.
Sorry, you seated next to numerous councillors, one of them which was the former mayor. Did you consult with any of them before you decided to fundamentally change what council's position was?
No.
Okay. The issue isn't so much with the Australia Day vote, it's the fact that Council's predetermined position was misrepresented at that meeting. I'm extremely disappointed about that. But more generally, how can councillors have confidence that their views are being represented accurately to Legat going forward when you so flagrantly disregarded a predetermined position and yet you deny that you've done anything wrong?
I think that's more of a statement than a question.
I said, how can councillors have confidence in your representation to Legat if you disregard their predetermined position and then don't accept that you've done anything wrong?
All questions, all issues to Legat will be decided by council prior to the attendance at that conference or meeting.
Okay. Mayor, part eight of our code of conduct is about representation. Part one of that says that when giving information to the community, a councillor must accurately represent the policies and decisions of council. Part four says a councillor must clearly indicate when he or she is putting forward his or her personal views. Part five says a councillor's personal views must not be expressed in such a way as to undermine the decisions of council or to bring council into disrepute. Part A says, when representing the council on external bodies, a councillor must strive to understand the basis of the appointment and be aware of the ethical and legal responsibilities attached. To me, your behaviour has potentially breached all of those points. Are you confident that your actions are within the bounds of the code of conduct?
I did not vote the way I personally would have done. I voted what I regard it was a correct way for council. Councillor Atkinson?
I was just reminded this when Councillor Grace was asking his question. Some time ago, I haven't got the email in front of me, feels like a year ago at least, we were discussing outgoing correspondence from the Mayor, and there was an agreement that outgoing correspondence would be put in the Dropbox so that we all had access to it. Is that still the procedure?
That or it goes into the folder at the back, yes.
So it's one or the other. Okay, so it changed back to going to a folder.
We haven't changed back. The question when you asked it, Councillor, was that you didn't care which way it went, and some of them will go in the Dropbox and some will go in the other, because that's where the copy of the letter will be that came in.
Okay, because I was under the understanding from the email that we had from when we discussed this was that they were going to go into the Dropbox. That's no longer the case. They all go in the Dropbox.
They all go either in the Dropbox or with a letter in the folder.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? I've got one question. And that is that at our last workshop on the 21st of August 2017, it was highlighted that the Tasmanian Government is committed to legislate for a target of zero emissions by the year 2050. In Kingborough Council's climate change action policy, we acknowledge the critical role of local government in responding to climate change and commit to taking a leadership approach. And a meaningful climate change response can be viewed as having three critical components. That's resilience, an example of progress on risk evaluation and adaptation planning. Governance, example progress on improvements to Council's corporate climate change governance scores. And mitigation, that is the energy, fuel, greenhouse gas reduction and progress towards net zero emissions. And we all need to set a meaningful, measurable, achievable target to demonstrate that our ongoing response to climate change. And the question that I'm asking is, what is the current status of Kingborough in relation to the three critical components to climate change? And can Kingborough aspire to having a target of net zero emissions on or before the year 2050? Mr. Doyle.
Thank you, Mayor, through you. I think in each of those three areas where we are well placed to set targets, we have made great progress in all of them, so I'd like to take that on notice and I'd be happy to provide a report to Council on that.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. Councils, move on to page 9, motions which notice has been given, and the first one, I'm not sure, Councillor Berry, you've got your response, and I don't know whether there's a question or a motion there, so it's up to you.
To the notice motion, I'd just like, if possible, someone to second it, and we can discuss it.
Councillor Atkinson, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson, for seconding this. Now, this motion is of absolutely no interest to three councillors sitting around the table, because computer literate, but I sit here with a paper copy. I usually bring my iPad and I start off the meeting with all good intentions of continuing to use it, but to invariably return to the paper copy. My personal view is I just need a little bit of assistance. I probably need a decent program that can actually help me to edit and all that sort of stuff. I don't think, from my point of view, I need a lot, but I just need a bit of a dig in the ribs and a bit of assistance to get myself paperless at these meetings. Now, I'm not suggesting that it should be obligatory, but I do think that as a council, when I occasionally look at photographs of other councils, the sitting down deliberating, they kind of all seem to have iPads or laptops that they're working off. I do think that, speaking for myself, I would like to be a little more contemporary. And so there is a response there from Mr. Malt suggesting that we can use the services of Mr. Malt and his staff to assist us as individuals. But it occurs to me that if we are going to do something, we really need to be, and it is an expression that I absolutely hate, but I have to say we need to be on the same page, as it were, using the same sort of program so we can actually communicate internally with each other in a reasonable way. I just wonder whether a workshop might be a good idea, just to have people's views and to plot a way forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillor Chadden?
Yes, Mayor, look, on one of the other boards that I'm on, we use a program called Diligent Boards, and it's on the iPad. The program is so easy to understand. It's the paperless board meetings, and it's used by councils in Victoria. I had talks with Mr. Malt. There is another program, apparently, Mr. Malt's aware of, that would also could fit the program. But the particular program that I use you can put sticky notes, you can write on it, you can highlight, you can do absolutely everything you can do with paper, and it's a paperless, and it's just as easy running it, but it's on an iPad, and an iPad's cheaper to use, easy to carry around, and I think those particular program rather than those on a laptop would be far better to use at a council. And I'm using it and haven't used it now for some months at this other board that I'm on. And it works exceptionally well. And I'm happy to show anybody the program at any stage.
Thank you. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. I think I'll speak because I second the motion and I'm one of the people who does use a computer. I won't second guess what technology Mr. Malt would suggest, or I'm not an iPad owner. But I think it is important that, I'm glad that Councillor Berry's raised this, because it's something that will stick. You know, we won't make the change if there isn't a bit of a push, and I get tired of seeing the dead tree versions of the agenda. I think it is time that we move into the 21st century, and there are real reasons that people find it difficult to work, whether it's with a tablet or a laptop, and I think this is a good way of exposing those, finding what the blockers are, and getting us to move forward. So I commend the motion.
Thank you. Councillor Grace?
I don't mind a workshop, but I think we've come a long way, but I personally don't think at this stage we'll be into a new election next year. I think it's something we can get through to after that, because we'll be up for quite a few candidates next year for council, and who knows, some of them may not be computer-minded. You know, and I mean that, I wasn't, when I came on the council, I had no, and I still got no idea, to be quite frank, and I'm first to admit it. I can turn it on and get my emails and stuff like that, but I prefer I'd be lost without the paper copy, and I believe that we should hold it off, and we've got amalgamation still breathing down our neck, a lot of other things. I think we've done pretty well, and I have no problem with the councillors that's got their computer on the table. Sometimes it's helpful, sometimes it's a hindrance, because they can look up things in 5 seconds and say, oh no, this is not right. So there's all for and against, but I think the training that you'd have to undertake and set us up, we've all had computers at home, and most of us are now giving back the computers from home because we don't need it anymore. So I'd prefer to hold it off. I mean, the recommendation is towards paperless meetings of genders. Well, I don't think you'll ever get rid of papers at meetings. That's my opinion.
Thank you. Councillor Berry, like to close. Councillor Fox.
I just look around the table tonight, and 7 out of the 10 councillors have brought paper, and the general manager's using paper. We are not a board, we are elected representatives. Does Parliament use paper? And I would prefer to have eye-to-eye contact rather than laptop-to-eye contact during the meeting, and I think it's really important that we have a choice. At the same time, I do appreciate the suggestion that we get some training so that we have a choice and we have the ability to bring along our iPads if we so desire. But I would be very disappointed to think that it's a move towards it being compulsory. And I already find it quite upsetting that the agendas are no longer delivered. And I would have thought that was contrary to the Local Government Act. I know that they come down the line and I can read them on my screen at home. And I often come in and collect my agendas, but I think it's a matter of equality and transparency and inclusiveness that it is available and it is delivered to those people who live away from the CBD. So I just feel it's quite a important process that we don't... I know it's a wonderful thing that we've got technology and I embrace it as much as I can, but it's important to give people choices. Thank you.
Question, Mayor. Councillor Fox, did you state that the agendas are no longer delivered? When did that take place? Because mine's been delivered.
I think there was a motion carried here a few months ago that they no longer be delivered. It was a way of cost cutting and saving money, and it was supported by the people around this table as far as I know. How many months, Councillor Chatterton? About 12 months. Yeah.
Yeah, mine's still delivered.
I think there are some very generous people on the staff. I think there are some generous people on staff who might drop them round afterward, but they're no longer delivered by courier to save cost.
Don't deliver them, I'll just read them and hold the meeting up all night.
Councillor Grace. Councillor Berry, would you like to close debate, please?
Yes, thank you. The I must confess I'm not aware of any evidence that meetings that are conducted electronically make decisions that are worse or less capable than any other form. The people who seem to bring laptops in here do seem to lift their heads and look at us. So, nor am I aware of any evidence of the converse either. But I think the notion that we should hang on to paper is kind of not a contemporary notion that I feel comfortable about. So, I persist in the suggestion that we do get together to have different ideas, to know what is necessary. We're not going to get anywhere with having a single or hopefully a program that we can all accommodate unless we do that. So I still think that a workshop would be a good idea, and I'll certainly be taking up the opportunity provided by Mr. Malt to get a little bit of training and assistance. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Berry, seconded by Councillor Atkinson, that would staff please prepare a report on actions necessary to facilitate progress towards paperless council meetings by councillors. A minority of councillors currently use laptops only for council meetings, and whilst not wishing to make the use of laptops obligatory, some basic training is probably all that would be necessary to encourage other councillors to move towards paperless meeting agendas. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? We'll have a division or a show of hands, please. Those in favour of the motion are Councillors Winter, Bastone, Percy, Chatterton, Fox, Berry, Atkinson, Reet and Watson. Opposing the motion, Councillor Grace. Motion is carried. We'll move on to page 10. Another motion from Councillor Berry. You've moved this, Councillor Berry? Yes. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Atkinson, Councillor Berry, if you'd like to speak to the motion, please.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Councillor Atkinson. I'm sure I don't need to dwell on the hazard of smoking tobacco. I've actually got some paper notes here, so my apologies to Councillor Fox, but I have to look at them the same way as they would be on screen. So... Anyway, I don't think I need to dwell on the hazards of smoking tobacco. I'm a paediatrician. I've looked after mothers who are pregnant who smoke and kids. And my current experience on the Tasmanian Health Council has enforced me to look at the health statistics in Tasmania. And become aware, as I think most of us are, that our rather poor health statistics, second only to the Northern Territory with regard to smoking incidents and the sequelae of smoking. The tobacco-free generation proposal is a proposal that has been around for 2 or 3 years. I think most people will be aware of the fact that Member of the Legislative Council, Mr. Dean, has moved this motion to the Legislative Council, and it was passed on to a committee, and quite coincidentally last week the amendments to the Public Health Act were brought before the government. Those proposed amendments did not pass. Even some fairly mild ones to do with smoking close to schools and public places. Mr. Dean said that he would be bringing on a private member's bill in the next session of Parliament. So the proposal does not prohibit smoking. It does not demonise smokers. The proposal is that cigarettes, tobacco, not be sold to people who are born after the year 2000. The Cancer Council has done a survey of which 75% of the general public supported the TFG proposal. Now, I'm not suggesting for a moment that that survey would be as accurate as a postal survey for same-sex marriage, but anyway, it is a survey that's been done, and the general public were involved. Just going into the age, 80% of smokers start by the age of 18, and almost everybody who's going to smoke starts by the age of 26. So we'll talk in a minute about the measures that have been undertaken to actually reduce smoking and help people quit who are already smoking. But this particular proposal is aimed at preventing youth initiation, and hopefully at some stage in the future ending the tobacco epidemic. So that's what the proposal is about, slowing or delaying or even stopping, in particular, the initiation of smoking. And of course, the date's been chosen 2000. Perhaps in 20 or 30 years, people will be talking about smoking tobacco as a last century phenomenon. Now, let's just consider the arguments that are raised against this proposal. One which I might say the tobacco industry are seriously opposed to, which I think is probably gives it a tick as something that is quite likely to be effective. First of all, prohibition. As I mentioned earlier, smoking is not being prohibited. Smokers are not being demonised. Just the sale of cigarettes to those born after the age of 2000. Another issue that's brought up is age discrimination. Now, when this was debated in the upper house, the opinion of Robin Banks, who was the discrimination commissioner at the time, pointed out that, in fact, the legislation that was available certainly supported the fact that this was not age discrimination. And my fundamental knowledge of law, which is fairly basic, my understanding of discrimination is that a group actually has to be disadvantaged in order to be discriminated against. The only disadvantage here is not smoking. Yeah, I know. The mayor, I'm sure, is in charge. So another issue is the legality of it. Now, a legal product after the age of 18, and whether this is a free choice to smoke. I've heard that stated before. Of course, you have a free choice to smoke for the first few weeks that you smoke.
30 seconds, Councillor.
And then, thank you, can I have another minute? And then it becomes an addiction when, of course, you have absolutely no free choice whatsoever. The last point I'd like to make is about harm minimization. If you look in the literature what people understand by harm minimization, there can be a wide understanding of it, but the more precise one is that harm minimization implies that in some way the engineering or the nicotine component of cigarettes is going to be altered in some way. That, of course, hasn't happened either by federal regulation or by the tobacco industry. So I'd be very interested to hear what my fellow councillors have to say about this proposal. I do think that it is something that we could support as a council. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillor Percy.
Thank you, Mayor. I must state up front that I worked for 20 years for a tobacco company, so but I am certainly against smoking in any way, and I'm very strong in those views. But I do have some reservations about this motion, that's all. It appears to be a simplistic approach to a major problem, I think. I believe it is discriminatory when if you're not allowing people their choice. My big thing is people have got to be responsible for their own actions, and the more laws we put on people, reducing that responsibility. So that's the first thing. With smoking, it's self-harm. You could say the same about obesity. The big thing that I'm certainly against is drugs. Whereas smoking is self-harm, drugs affects other people in the community. So if we are looking at, I think it's part of our thing here, I'm just trying to think now. Health and well-being, that we're to provide health, safety and welfare for the community, then maybe we should be looking equally at how drugs affect our communities. Does it mean that if people, we're saying we're not discriminating, but if people over this age, they're not allowed to be sold cigarettes, but if they actually smoke, does that mean they could have a criminal record? That's one of the things I'm concerned about too. Surely education at a younger age would probably have as good an outcome as this anyway, and that's what we should be working on. I think I've noticed over the last 20 years about smoking, certainly the kids in schools and that, their attitude towards smoking is, definitely shouldn't be smoking. So there is a change in culture there. I'm surprised it doesn't relate to the figures that people are suggesting that people are smoking these days. So says there the benefits protects the 76,000 Tasmanians addicted. Well, how does this protect these smokers? They're the ones that we should be aiming at, the ones that are already smoking as well. So as I said before, I have some reservations about this motion because it doesn't try and fix other problems in the community that are greater than smoking, as far as the outcomes on communities, and it's also not trying to fix up those people that are already smoking that already creating self-harm. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Percy. Councillor Winter.
Yes, thanks. I totally disagree with this notice of motion. I think it's the legislation itself is a terrible idea, and actually I think will make matters worse. I just wanted to pick up a couple of things that Councillor Berry said first. He said that harm minimisation hasn't occurred and there hasn't been any regulatory work. Now, that's completely incorrect. According to the Cancer Council, the amount of tar and nicotine in Australia in cigarettes made in Australia and consumed in Australia has fallen substantially since the 1960s, and that's due mostly to the regulatory burden of the Australian government, but also some self-regulation by the companies themselves. You'll see that in the amount of tar in particular, but also the amount of nicotine that's allowed to be in legally sold cigarettes in Australia. The legislation itself comes from a really good place. I think who would argue against having less people smoke? We know that it kills people. We know it costs the hospital system a lot of money. But there's essentially two ways that you can deal with behaviours that you don't like in the community. You can prohibit them through a prohibitionist response, which is exactly what's being proposed here. If you look back to the 1930s in America, what they were doing was not prohibiting the actual consumption of the alcohol, although they weren't too pleased with that either, but mostly it's about the manufacture and sale of the alcohol. And they found that that was a total and utter failure. Unfortunately, that hasn't been learnt across the world in the time since. What if we could ban littering and people would stop throwing their rubbish out the car window? What if we could ban bullying and children would stop being mean to each other? What if we could ban alcohol or tobacco for under 18s and they would actually stop using it? Unfortunately, we know that none of those things can happen. It's not as easy as just making something illegal. In fact, we found that those approaches simply don't work. One of the approach that has worked best in Australia has actually been harm minimisation, particularly through cigarettes. All the evidence tells us that the war on drugs that Councillor Percy mentions is actually failing. Hospitalisation for incidents relating to ecstasy and ice are growing, and there has not been any decrease in heroin use, except for that which is through substitution to other illegal drugs. But conversely, the evidence tells us that harm minimisation approach to cigarettes has been a success. The ABS calculates the real value of cigarette sales in Australia has fallen by over 30% since 1960. The real value of cigarette sales are at their lowest ever. Further, Australian customs advisors, or now Border Force advisors, that tobacco clearances have fallen an astonishing 11% since 2012. So that's in 5 years they've decreased by 12%. So given that harm minimisation is actually working across Australia, that's proven evidence that this is the best approach we've got. Why are professional legislators like Ivan Dean wanting to expand prohibition to behaviours like smoking? It is a terrible idea. To understand why the Tobacco-Free Generation Bill an increase in the legal smoking age are bad ideas, it's important to understand that the current harm minimisation approach has been an absolute fundamental success. The taxation revenue from cigarettes has now reached a point that not only is it providing a huge disincentive for people to smoke, but it's actually paying for the additional health costs on the actual smokes themselves. Now, if you make things illegal, you don't get that taxation revenue. You're not able to pay for the health effects. If you make things illegal, you're not actually able to quantify how successful you are. If we have almost no idea how much ICE people are consuming, except for to go and measure it at the sewage works. We know exactly how much cigarettes people are smoking because we can count the sales at the various retailers across Tasmania, Australia. By regulating and understanding people, you understand what works. Things like plain packaging are another great harm minimisation approach to smoking. So whilst I appreciate the endeavour in the legislation, also what Councillor Berry, as a paediatrician, is trying to do here, unfortunately, factual evidence says that this is a bad idea that won't work, and not only that, it'll actually have a negative impact on those really successful harm minimisation approaches that we've seen in Australia over many years.
30 seconds, Councillor.
And that sums me up. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Fox.
I thank the previous speakers for their excellent research and comments. In 1988, I think, Councillor Abbott, who was also a doctor, and I put a motion to the Kingborough Council that we ban cigarette smoking on council-owned property. And I think we were the first council in the state to do that, and that continues to this very day. So it's well known that I'm very concerned about cigarette consumption. My parents both died of cancer, my father from lung cancer, and he smoked since the age of 12. He didn't make it to 70. But I think it's important. Education is more important than banning, and I totally agree with Councillor Winter. The purchasing of cigarettes by a particular age group is hardly hardly going to stop them smoking and having access to those cigarettes. And even the fact that they are allowed to smoke if they're underage, then there's no punishment. So I just don't see that this particular law that Ivan Dean is trying to bring in is going to be very helpful. And it's gone to a committee who may well modify the position that he has and the motion that we're currently voting on, which is that we support the motion that he had put, which may well come out as something quite different after the committee's dealt with it. So reluctantly, I would vote against the motion, even though I'm very concerned about the issue, but I don't think this particular motion is going to achieve the outcome that we would really like. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Bastone.
When the Honourable Ivan Dean first mooted this, it was in 2016, and there was time to do something. Now it's 4 months until people will be 18 who were born in the year 2000, and he's saying that it's not going to go up until after the next election. So there are going to be people who were born in the year 2000 who will be legally smoking. So does that mean that they're going to say to them all of a sudden, well, you've been legally smoking until March, but now, unfortunately, you can no longer smoke? So I think he's missed the timing, apart from anything else. It's very easy to get illegal tobacco in Australia now.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Councillor Gross?
Look, this won't stop any. I started smoking at school when I was 10. 10 years of age I started smoking, and when I couldn't get cigarettes, we'd go and get bark off a tree and roll it and smoke that. Talk about alcohol. I don't know how old I was when I drank alcohol, but I think it was 21 before you were allowed in a pub them days, in a hotel, should I say. I can tell you now, we were getting alcohol well before then. We got sprung a couple of times, but it didn't matter. They took it off us and we went back and got more. So this sort of stuff's not going to help. I think education, I think the smoking, and if you look at the television like we all do and look at this air control coming into Australia now where they're searching all these luggages and that, you'll find more and more cigarettes being brought into Australia legally, and they're selling them on the black market. So all we're going to do is open it up into a wider field where people, if you want cigarettes, you'll go and get them. So I'll be voting against it.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Chadden.
First of all, I'd like to start with a question which Councillor Berry may or may not be able to answer. I understand from what I read in the paper, which I think I read in the paper the other day, that the Honourable Ivan Dean has actually withdrawn his motion at this point in time. Is that correct?
I'll ask Councillor Berry.
He withdrew the motion when there were amendments to the Public Health Act proposed, but he said he would move a private member's bill, as Councillor Bastone said, at the next sitting of Parliament.
So the Honourable Ivan Dean does not have a motion before Parliament at this point in time. Is that correct?
Is that correct? I mean, I don't know whether it must be correct because he's going to bring forward
another one. Whilst I'm totally opposed to smoking, and I've never been a smoker myself, but I find this now, this proposal, the words of the motion, I think are out of order. And the reason I say that is because there's a proposed motion that may come, and we've seen and heard that it may go to a committee and it may come forward. And I feel very uneasy about voting for something which we don't know what the words of that motion may or may not be. So I'm wondering whether the mover would consider allowing the motion to sit on the table pending the motion coming, that we know what's in the motion of the Honourable Ivan Dean, rather than perhaps vote on something tonight which may be lost or may be passed, but we're voting on something we don't know what the motion is because it's not out there anywhere.
Councillor Berry?
I just need a little bit of time to think about that. I mean, the proposal itself is very clear and unchanged. I have no reason to believe that Mr. Dean will change the private member's bill from what he originally proposed, but I don't know that, obviously. If anyone else wants to speak, I'll just think about...
I'll invite Councillor Atkinson to speak.
Mm. Thank you, Mayor. I think it's been a really interesting discussion. On that last issue, and I guess why I'm prepared to support this, the motion is to support the tobacco-free generation proposal as moved by the Honourable Ivan Dean. It's pretty clear what his proposal is, and yes, the wording might turn into something catastrophically different, in which case we can catastrophically change our minds and support a different position. But at the moment, it's pretty clear what he's proposing. He's proposing that people born before the year 2000 won't be allowed to buy tobacco. Now, after year 2000. And yes, it's a very short time until then, and maybe what he eventually proposes won't be the year 2000. It may have to be slipped forward. But the principle of this is pretty clear. What he's proposing is that we have this phased out legality of supply of tobacco. When I first heard about this, I had concerns from a discrimination point of view. I thought, well, how peculiar it'll be when a 50-year-old can smoke and a 49-year-old can't. But those fears, I think, have been allayed. Firstly, as Councillor Berry pointed out to me, that Robin Banks has assured us that as far as legality of discrimination, it's fine. And Robin Banks is someone for which I have great respect, and if there was a discrimination case to answer, she'd be the first person I'd ask for a legal position. I think that the issues that Councillor Winter and others have raised about whether this is the right approach and whether harm minimisation is the way to go are all very valid, but one doesn't wipe out the other. I mean, we're not proposing to make it illegal for young people or people under a certain age to buy tobacco, and we'll get rid of the plain packaging laws or any of that. All that would happen hand in hand with this. This is yet another thing to move forward, a trend which is there and which is apparently stalling to some degree. I think there's interesting comparisons. People have talked about other harder drugs, and I totally agree that the criminalisation of drug users, you know, the war on drugs has failed as an approach. This isn't criminalising users. This is making the supply illegal. So that's not necessarily a criminal offence, firstly, and it's not the user who's the offender. And so there's a distinction there. And I agree that criminalisation of other drugs hasn't worked as a solution. It's, to me, inconsistent to say continue to criminalise other drugs and supply tobacco the way we do. That's a bigger discussion. There's important points in some of Councillor Berry's background there, that it's early on that people take up smoking, and I certainly take Councillor Grace's point. You know, I was around people at high school that smoked a lot younger than 18 or 16 or whatever the age was then. Of course there was, and of course there will be, but if that's less and less a thing, you know, at the moment if someone's sort of 18, we're not really sure whether they can legally smoke, it'll be a stage where that age will be 30, or that age will be pretty obvious that young people shouldn't be smoking, or people under a certain age shouldn't be smoking. And of course there'll be a black market, and of course there'll be people underage that smoke, but it'll be harder and harder for them. It'll be less and less common that people are smoking. Councillor Winter's point about knowing how much tobacco use there is now, and that's true to some degree, but there is also a huge black market in tobacco that they have to guess, and that will, you know, may well become a large percentage of the case, I don't know, but we certainly know, we don't know at the moment exactly how much tobacco is consumed. I think this sort of cultural change is important. People, whether it's smoking or other addictions, take them up often because they, someone they admire has that habit. That was the case with cigarettes, and that's why there was a push to, you know, remove cigarette smoking on television and the movies and so on. It is putting that cultural change in place, and if fewer and fewer people are smoking, it'll become less and less a norm. I'm in support of this because it doesn't take away all those other things that we're doing. It doesn't mean you don't have public education campaigns. It doesn't mean you don't talk in schools about the harm of tobacco. It's just another tool that's going to help with this. So I think this is a good idea.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you. I'll only be brief because I think there's been some very good contributions that have been made by others around the table. My thoughts are very similar to Councillor Atkinson's, and that is that any further mechanism that we can put in place is another weapon, if you like, in the arsenal against young people smoking. And both my children happen to fall into the age group that would be impacted by this. Thankfully, neither of them smoke. I guess they haven't grown up in the culture of smoking. But I would like to see as many deterrents as we possibly can, and I do see that this proposal by Ivan Dean could go some way to providing yet another opportunity to deter people from smoking. And I think if there's anything we can do for the greater health of our community, then we should grab it with both hands.
Thank you. I think I'm the only one not to have spoken. Is anyone? I'll just lead off and then I'll ask Councillor Berry to close debate. Look, I guess if we could stop smoking tomorrow, I'd be fully supportive of it. It's a very addictive drug. It hooks people, it keeps people. It's certainly an economic drain on them and their families. The question I would have is, for what is the proposed punishment for the lawbreakers, i.e. the sellers, and what is the proposed punishment for the purchaser? And will that deter them? Prohibition doesn't work. It never has worked. I think we've got to change the culture, and the only way we can do that is through education and also to change and treat it as a health issue rather than perhaps the way we deal with drugs now. And if we deal with other drugs now, if this goes through, is that the way we then deal with tobacco as well as the other drugs? So I'm a little bit concerned on that part. From the retail sales of cigarettes, it's well known that the retail sales are down, but it's also well known that the black market, particularly from China, is up, and they don't know what is even in half the tobacco that comes in from China, and it's an increasing substance coming in. So I don't see that by putting an age limit on it that it's going to deter people, particularly those on the black market. And the markup on the black market is quite substantial to what they buy it for and what they sell it for, and yet it's a lot cheaper than what it is retail. As I said, as much as I would love to support it and see smoking eradicated from our community, I don't believe that's going to be the case, and I think we can only go by education, so I don't think that I can support it. So, Councillor Berry, I'll ask you to close debate.
Thank you, Mayor. To respond to Councillor Chetton, I think we should vote on this. I mean, if I wish to, I can bring this motion back at another time. So the point that seems to have been lost, I don't know particularly when Councillor Winter was speaking, it seemed to me that the whole emphasis of this is on future generations. It's got nothing whatever to do with current smokers. It's got nothing to do with harm minimisation. And as for low tar, I've looked at the evidence quite carefully. There's absolutely no evidence that lowering the tar content in cigarettes actually had a health outcome of any benefit whatsoever. I also don't understand how Councillor Winter can say this is a stupid idea that it's not going to work when it's never been done before. I mean, that seems a strange statement to me. It hasn't been done before. So a lot of other issues. I went over time before, but if I can just pick up one thing that Councillor Percy said about the criminal record. We currently have a legal smoking age of 18, and nobody, no parent has been summoned, nobody, because they gave cigarettes to their kids or to their friends or friends' kids or anything. No one's got a criminal record. So concerns about a criminal record seem to me to be, well, not that important. So anyway, as I said, the emphasis is on future generations, you know, the people who are coming after us that we should be thinking about. It does not penalise existing smokers. I heard the words illegal and prohibition and used fairly liberally. I thought I'd made that clear in my opening remarks. So obviously I believe that in combination with other supportive measures, this proposal presents the opportunity finally to consign the tobacco problem to its rightful place, and I apologise for this, to the ashtray of history. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Berry and seconded by Councillor Atkinson that Kingborough Council supports the tobacco-free generation proposal as moved by the Honourable Ivan Dean, MLC. I'll ask councillors to vote. Those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
No.
I'll have a division or a show of hands, please. Those in favour of the motion are councillors Berry, Atkinson, Reet and Fox, and opposing the motion are councillors Winter, Grace, Bastone, Percy, Chatterton and Watts. Motion is lost. The next item is on page 12, and I'll ask the Deputy Mayor to take the chair.
So we have a notice of motion submitted by Councillor Walsh in relation to supporting, requesting Leggett's support to facilitate a forum with key waste and recycle stakeholders, with local government members, to explore ways of improving waste management across the Strait, determine issues, impediments, opportunities and strategic actions to advance and improve both waste and recycling across the state, report findings to local government members and facilitate a forum with the Environment Protection Authority and Minister for the Environment and local government members. It is moved by Councillor Walsh. Do we have a seconder for the motion? Thank you, Councillor Chatterton. Councillor Walsh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Look, I think the time is right that we need to be involved, because we're looking now at doing a new waste strategy plan. On top of that, we understand that the state government is looking at plastic bags and doing an audit and looking at other aspects. And Hobart City Council have also discussed the banning of single-use plastics. On that, it's true to say that various regional and state bodies exist, all in the interests of looking at it, but unfortunately we don't get together and we don't talk about it. And on that basis, different councils, even in the southern region, have different ideas regarding recycling. We know that that happens on a regional basis because we have different systems in place, but even, as I said, in southern Tasmania, we're a little bit different. I think we need to know what our options are going forward. Are we doing some of these things, say, for recycle that we think is good, but it's not going into recycling? We don't know where that's going. We'd like to think, and certainly any of the community members would like to think, that the items they put out into recycle end up that way. Likewise, if it's a single-use plastic, what infrastructure is necessary for us to cater for that if we were to go the same way? And what are the implications then on the various retailers? Now, some retailers have, in the last 12, 18 or 24 months, given a discount of, say, 50 cents for a cup of coffee if you bring your own coffee, which more than would more than compensate for the cost. There are also others that previously had steel cutlery that have now gone into plastics. So what can we do to utilise those people to go back into steel? The single plastic is very easy. It goes straight into the rubbish tin and it goes into landfill. But is there a better option for it? Those are the type of things that I believe we need to do. And by talking with the key waste and stakeholders and recycle stakeholders, I think will give us an idea of, you know, what do they see in particular? What are the issues at the coalface so that we can follow through and be on the same page? And I think we've also got to determine what those issues are, the impediments and the opportunities. Can a business start up using some of these recycled materials across the state? Is it possible that we can go forward with that and perhaps introduce employment?
And then, of course, at the end of the day, we need to talk with the EPA and the Minister for Environment with the idea that these are the issues, this is what we've got from industry, and this is the support we need. So I just think that now is the time. The Four Corners program brought a lot of people onto recycling in particular and where their waste goes. So on that basis, I commend the motion to you and ask for your support.
Thank you. Councillor Chatterton.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. One of the problems that I see is the cost. Back over 20 years ago, I was one of the instigators in trying to get recycling into this municipality, and we started off with a Hessian bag. Then from there we went to some crates. Then from the crates we go now to the wheelie bins. But one of the problems we've got at the moment is a lot of people don't really know what to put in the wheelie bin. And they put things in there they think can be recycled. I know of someone who put a lamp in there, for example, thinking that, oh, that'll go in there, then it will go to recycled and it'll be pulled out and put in the tip shop. But that's what people think. You know, and they don't understand. And education is one of the problems we've got. And I believe, and I may be wrong, but I believe if you got something in the recycling bin which can contaminate the whole truckload is then has to go to landfill when it gets to the recycling place because it's contaminated. So there are real problems with that. We used to have a ship that would come into Hobart and take the recycling, or into Tasmania, and take the recycling straight overseas. That doesn't happen anymore. It now goes out via Victoria. So it's double handling costs, and the costs are getting prohibitive. We need to look at ways to make it viable to recycle. Recycling, you know, with the cost of commodity prices are going down and up and down, and we find that in some cases, we know, we have to stockpile certain metals at the tip at certain times or at the waste transfer station because it's not economical to sell it. And that's what happens with the commodity prices going up and down as well. So it's an endless minefield, but I think the more work we can do and looking into it and trying to make it less going to landfill is all the better for all of us.
Councillor Gross.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Look, I don't even know why it wasn't on the agenda for the last AGM, LGA's conference, and get all the councillors and maybe asked also the LGAT to look at the situation with our waste and whether or not the council, the government should take it over as a whole itself. And you've seen the state it's in Victoria, Sydney, up as far as Queensland. We've had reports, and I've reported them to this council, that our contractors wasn't recycling because people were ringing up saying they were taking the recycle bin and the rubbish bin together on the same truck. So it's been going on, and we know that, and we know the problems since was it Veolia closed their recycling works down in where they build the ships at what's the name out at Risdon. But I think it's a good it's a good motion to put forward, but just how much that our staff need to spend on this, it says council request LGAT, but I think LGAT needs to workshop it with not just general managers and mayors, they need to workshop it with the elected members. Maybe it's a good workshop for them to pick up another grant, $900,000 to have a workshop.
Councillor Berry.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I just had a question to start with. Perhaps I could ask the Mayor, was it planned to have this motion go forward to the LGAT? I mean, I can't see any other way of handling it. It follows on, to some extent, what Councillor Grace had said, that to get LGAT's support, we'd need to actually have the motion put forward, would we not, at a general meeting and discuss there. Is that what the Mayor had intended, or otherwise I can't quite work out how you know, the LGAT are going to deal with this.
Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, that was my intention, Councillor Berry, that it needs to go to Legat so that Legat can facilitate.
Well, I think that needs to be number five on the motion in that case, that a relevant motion goes forward to the next general meeting of the LGAT, something like that. Would the Mayor agree with that?
Right on. I'm happy for that. That was the intention.
And I realise that was the intention.
And if the seconder is happy, I'm more than happy.
But I think if it's sent forward as it is, I think the CEO or the President is going to say, well, this needs to be debated at the next general meeting. Fundamentally, I'd like to hear the debate at the general meeting. I mean, there's nothing in that that I could disagree with. I mean, I'm thinking, well, you know, the city of Hobart has an aspirational goal of having nothing, nil going to landfill. I think it's by 2030, isn't it? Is that correct? 2030? I mean, you know, if the whole of Tasmania were to take on that aspirational goal, it would kind of fix all that. But I do pay rates in the city of Hobart, and I'm familiar with what they're up to and the sort of actions that can come from an aspirational goal like they have. I mean, I think it would be great if we could share that, but we do need more people together, and that's one of the things I thought about the motion. Well, why don't Southern Tasmanian Council Authority, for example, where we deal with our own waste and we've got copping, and have that as an aspirational goal as well. Anyway, my question was to, I'd just be interested to see, and I think important, this motion discussed LGAT. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Berry. I can see some alternative words of just, there's a slight amendment to the first sentence, so it now reads that Council request Legat support at a general meeting too, and then the remaining 4 points are the same. Are the mover and seconder happy with those slight changes? Thank you. Further speakers, Councillor Fox.
Well, I think that was the main reason I wanted to speak, because I thought it was beyond us as a council to do this, and having a combination of LGAT and STCA working on this, I think is a much better outcome. It's obviously a very complicated issue. There are so many questions here that need answering, and we're all grappling with, and I think it's important that we do take a unified approach, as it states in our officer's response. I couldn't agree more with those comments, and I support the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you. I just had a question first too, because I was a little bit confused by that first phrase, and now it's changed. So is this suggesting this is Legat to support council to facilitate a forum, is it, or it's for Legat to facilitate a forum? I'm not sure what the intent is.
If I can answer that, it would be Legat.
Because it does say council request Legat to support at a general meeting too, and that to me, I could read that as Legat supporting us to facilitate. So I just wanted to get that clear.
No, it's Legat to carry out those four.
So you want to, okay. I guess my other concerns with the motion, and people have raised the economic impact on retailers, and I think that their stakeholders, I mean, this is only talking about people involved in the industry of disposal of waste or removal of waste and recycling, I think it would be important to have someone at least to represent retailers in this, and the other group seems to be excluded to me are people with scientific or academic expertise in the environmental impacts of waste. Once again, we're just talking to people involved in the industry who have a business or economic bias, I think it is important to have other experts involved in this sort of discussions. So I certainly agree with the intent of getting people together and hopefully finding some good outcomes. My concern is this
could be a bit of a talk fest and not come to anything that can actually be implemented or anything practical. But I won't try to be too negative about it. I mean, I agree with the intent and I'll support the motion, but I'm concerned that there might be some groups that aren't being included in this discussion.
Thank you. If there are no further speakers, I'll put the motion. Moved by Councillor Wass, seconded by Councillor Chatterton, and it reads that Council requests Legat support at a general meeting to 1. Facilitate a forum with key waste and recycle stakeholders such as Veolia, SKM, etc., with local government members to explore ways of improving waste management across the state. 2. To determine issues, impediments, opportunities and strategic actions to advance, improve both waste and recycling across the state. 3. Report findings to local government members. And 4. Facilitate a forum with the Environmental Protection Authority, Minister for the Environment and local government members. All those in favour, say yes. Against? Motion is carried unanimously. I'll hand back to the Mayor.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. The next item is on page 15, motion forwarded by Osborne Esplanade by Councillor Percy. You formally move that, Councillor Percy. Councillor Chatterton has seconded. Councillor Percy.
Thank you, Mayor. Really, all I'm trying here is to get a trial, but the reason why I've put in this in that I want to report is because I just want to know what the expected costs are. I don't want to put an imposition on the council outside the budget, but I would think that probably the only costs that would be involved would be some signage and probably advertising in the paper. I had a fair bit to do the Kingston Beach Master Plan over years for a Rotary, trying to get things done down there, and I think it's been on the shelves for quite some time. And when it did come out 2 or 3 years ago, I remember the councils were on our annual visit around CapEx projects, and it was mentioned by quite a few councillors at that time, well, what are we doing about the transport down here, the traffic movements on Kingston Beach on Osborne Esplanade. I think at some stage, I know we've had a report from Pitt and Sherry, I think it is, but I think at some stage it's probably become a little bit too hard basket. All I'm trying to do here is make sure we know what the expected costs are. I think we all should know what, have an evaluation process so that we know how successful this trial is as well, so that should come back in the report. I think in the report Pitt Sherry said that some of the adjacent roads weren't able to carry the additional traffic. I've looked around those roads quite often, and even the only one that I'd probably be concerned about maybe is Victoria Street, but that may be a one-way street as well. If a trial is done, so that's something that the engineers can look at anyway. I'm just a bit concerned that we've started last week, I think it is on one section of the Osborne Esplanade, and that's going to go down to where the toilets are. I think if we do any more of the project in future, we're going to lose the opportunity to do something about the traffic movements through there, so I think it's critical at this stage to do that. We always say that there's a problem down there with parking. I think the fact that if it's a one-way movement, people backing out of their parking spots won't have to look one way, and it'll be obviously a safety improvement. And also, I think if we did a bit of angle parking, we may even get to a stage where we could nearly have parking on either side of the road. I'm not quite sure about that, but that's something that can be looked at when we're doing the trialling as well. So that's why I propose this motion. I hope you get support. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Percy. Councillor Berry?
First of all, would like to ask a question. I was under the impression, unless I've missed something, that Mr. Reeve was looking at this proposal about traffic again as part of the Kingston Beach Master Plan, and I'm not aware that I've seen his conclusion, because we had a workshop in which the sort of concerns that Councillor Percy has expressed, and he agreed to go away and think about the traffic again. Now, am I correct? Are we still waiting for a report, or have we had it and it kind of flashed by me without me noticing?
Mr. Arnold, please.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I'm mindful that Mr. Reeve is not in attendance tonight, but my recollection was that there would be follow-up work from that workshop, but I suspect that given this notice of motion, that that has probably circumvented that further work until the outcome of this is decided tonight.
Okay, just to say briefly, I mean, I totally support what I've spoken fairly deliberately about my support for one-way traffic down Osborne Esplanade, and unless, when we really have this in front of us, unless someone can persuade me to the contrary, I will not be supporting anything that does not include one-way traffic down Osborne Esplanade. So there are issues about parking. I mean, I've made the outrageous suggestion, I know, that you know, our current public car park, that we actually enlarge it and put another story on it, or two stories, or, you know, I mean, it's absolutely unthinkable that we should think ahead like that. But to deal with parking, I appreciate. But, yeah, I'm totally in support of this, and I think I've said enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillor Weiner.
Thanks, Mayor. Yeah, as I own a property on the particular on Osborne Esplanade, so but given this is just to get a report, I did see an issue, but if this goes to a decision, I'll sort of reconsider my view. This has, the Kingston Beach Master Plan has been around for a long time in the draft format. It is great to see that we're doing more work on the foreshore at the moment, but it really feels to me like we've got to finalise what our vision is for Kingston Beach before we really sink our teeth into this. You know, I expected when I came on council that I'd be advocating for Kingston Beach to be fixed every budget, but I really can't, because we don't actually have an idea of what it is we want it to look like. That includes things like the direction, the traffic, and also parking that Councillor Berry referenced. So, I suppose my view on the draft was that it was a bit. Whilst it was good, I think this is a good opportunity for us to do something, you know, really good. This is one of our most popular locations in Kingborough, and we should try and do as best job as we can. And I'd need to be convinced. I think it's highly likely that I would support a one-way Osborne Esplanade, even though it would personally disadvantage me, probably, I guess. But I think, I don't know, I have to think about it. But yeah, look, I think it's a good idea to do a trial. The thing is that people, particularly locals there, hopefully don't get too scared by it. It's a trial. Hopefully the timing could be around the summer period, where we get, you know, the peak amount of cars and we can see how it works. You know, trials can allay fears, or they can bring up issues that we hadn't thought of. So I think a trial is a really good idea. I think consultation with police is probably a good idea as part of this report as well. Just in terms of, they're the ones that will have to actually monitor and regulate this transition. There's no doubt it might take people a little while to get used to it. I'm interested in which way the traffic is proposed to go as well, but I'm looking forward to that in a report. Again, I'm not really sure which way the traffic would be best to go, but we will figure that out, I'm sure. Yes, but apart from that, I did notice that the Kingston Beach Community Association is supportive of this as well, which is another good sign for it. So I think it's a sensible approach going forward. You know, interested to see what the engineering guys come back with in terms of whether there's any big standout issues with running a trial, but hopefully we can at least get to that stage and identify any issues that go forward after that.
Thank you, Councillor Winter. Councillor Grace.
Well, I sat here when we debated the toilets, and I said something about we'll regret it. We did regret it, didn't we? We didn't listen to the people, and we're not listening to the people again. There was a trial conducted by the police and also the Kingston Beach Community Association. It was blocked off for some period. I think you were mayor at the time, Councillor Berry. It caused nothing but chaos. In fact, the police in the end asked to remove the barrages down there. It caused that much trouble. It didn't do anything it was set out to do. and it won't again. It's not going to be different because you're going to have to barricade the road off if you're going to, or unless you make it one way all the way round, and then I think you'll find it'll even be worse. You've got to take into account a couple of the businesses. Admittedly, there's only a couple of businesses around the corner on the Esplanade. They have to have access to their trade that comes in there with their stock. So you know, there's all sorts of problems you're going to have. But I'm just saying, if this council, see, the trouble is, we as a council, we lose so many staff at this council, and then nobody knows what the other fellas have done, and that's what's costing these ratepayers of Kingborough so much money, because it was already done and it was a flop. Now that should be on record. David Rees should be able to go into his computer and pick all that stuff up. I think it's the mayor I gave the general manager when I threaded all my stuff from Margate, when I know Osborne Esplanade was in that. That's why I threw it away, because I didn't think this would ever come up again. We have spent, as a council of my time, down on Osborne Esplanade, we could have built it completely. We've done bits and pieces, and then we've gone back and pulled them out again. We've had to go back and rip them up because, oh, we forgot to put a conduit in, or we forgot to put something in. And I said right along at this table, do all the infrastructure first, underwater, stormwaters and sewers, get all those fixed up before you even start thinking about it. Kingston Beach has great potential. You could have a boardwalk off the wall onto the beach. You could have all sorts of things, but every time you suggest something, oh, no, you can't do that. And that's the problem we've got. But I've said enough about it, but I can't, unfortunately, I won't support this because, again, there's going to be a massive uproar if we start to close off that street again, or even talking about one way.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Fox?
I will remember the trial that we had before, and this one-way solution is only one aspect of a very complex issue down there. I'm not sure which way, for example, and if you look at the Hobart City streets, which are one-way, we've had traffic studies saying that that actually speeds up the traffic, and maybe we should be looking at no traffic in some sections of those streets, because at the moment cars seem to be backing into pedestrians because they're, or almost hitting pedestrians because they're looking both ways and they're not sure which way they're coming from. But if you think, if is a car driver and you think they're only going to come from your left and you, because that's where the cars are coming from, the pedestrians were probably coming from both sides. So that's going to make it more dangerous rather than less dangerous. So I just feel that this is not an appropriate way for this council to be dealing with the traffic management of this really valuable part of Kingston. I was really looking forward to a further report from our engineers after the workshop, and I don't think that this motion captures all the possibilities and all the complexities and the disadvantages and the advantages of just one particular section and which direction. So I'm afraid I don't support the motion. I'd rather get a full comprehensive report from our engineering staff. Thank you.
Councillor Fox, Councillor Chadden.
Well, from my knowledge, the other trial to which Councillor Grace alluded to was in relation to Hooning.
Correct.
And that, I believe, was when the late Don Hazel was mayor, if my memory serves me correctly as well. And the Esplanade was blocked off. It wasn't one way, it was blocked off to stop the Hooning along the Esplanade. This is a completely different proposition that's been put before us. And I think one of the other things we need to think about, yes, engineers can come and put a proposal together as related to Councillor Fox alluded to. However, if you haven't trialled something, how can you get a proper report? You know, in theory, people can sit behind a desk and come up with all sorts of ideas. But unless you've trialled something, you don't know whether it's going to work or not. If one looks at what happens on the mainland in some of the areas, they only have one way of traffic. The parking is on an angle, and the parkers are asked to back into the curb. So when they come out, they're not running over people backing out into traffic, alluded to by Councillor Fox. And it works exceptionally well, because you're only looking one way and when you come out. So it's quite clear. Safety is paramount down there. Yesterday morning, when I was down there at about 10:15, a car came along and parked in front of three cars. Left its engine running with its flashing lights going and went into a cafe. One of the cars that was blocked off was my friends who were with me. The other car that was blocked off was a disabled gentleman who couldn't access his car with his walking frame because of this car was parked there. I've got a photo of it. I'm happy to show you the photo of the Victorian car. When the gentleman came out, and I'll call him a gentleman, when the gentleman came out from the cafe, he was approached by these people, and the language he used and the threats he put on these people, he told them he'd park his car where he wanted to park his car. They were absolutely gobsmacked by this particular gentleman. But the attitude of this person was, I'll just park where I want. And they blocked one lane of the traffic and blocked these cars in while they went in and bought a hamburger. So people are just, they don't care. And we've got to make sure that we make this safer. Angle parking, one way, widen the foreshore, give more space back to the people. That's what it's all about, in my opinion. And if you don't trial something, you don't know whether it's going to work.
Thank you. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. As a preamble, I'd like to say I like the way this report, this motion's worded, and I can learn some things from Councillor Percy, because he's not second-guessing the engineering staff, but he's asking for a report on the feasibility of a trial, and he's left it delightfully open-ended and said expected costs, possible timings for the trial, potential risks, and any other issues deemed relevant. I think it's important for us to rely on our professional staff and their guidance, and that's what he's asking for here. So I think it's a good motion. I am certainly not going to tell stories about cars that I have or haven't been run over by on the foreshore, and I have some strong opinions about parking on the foreshore there, but I think this is a good idea. The community is asking for it. We've had several emails from people that have said, why don't you do a trial? Is it possible? Trials have been proven. Urbanists globally talk about trialing these things. They talk about just give it note, whether it's for a few days of the week or some particular time that people know it's going to happen. Trials have their point. It's slightly contrary to Councillor Chatterton. There is great benefit in professional staff using their knowledge and experience to work out what's going to happen. We wouldn't have got to the moon if we didn't go, let's just keep trying till we get there. So both sides of this are valuable. I think it's good that the staff will say whether they think a trial is worthwhile, what will be the implications of it, and then if they decide that it's worthwhile, they'll bring a report to us either way. We can then decide whether what we do with that, whether we go ahead with a trial or what. So I think this is a worthwhile motion and I support it.
Thank you. Have all council spoken that wish to speak?
I'll just add a few things here then. Look, I agree with the intent of the motion in the sense that there's been a traffic issue on Kingston Beach for many, many years. There has been a number of people going back to when we had two community groups on Kingston Beach. Both of them wanted trials, and that has never ever taken place. Even at the last Legat, it was mentioned there that you can save a lot of money and get involved into things and do it by doing a trial rather than seeking a report, which all the report will do is gather dust. On that basis, I would foreshadow a motion, if this is lost, that council, with support of the Kingston Beach residents and businesses, undertake trialling of one-way traffic in Osborne Esplanade, Kingston Beach, to test the concept, obtain community feedback and report to council back as appropriate. In other words,
that supports the intent of Councillor Percy's motion, but it gets the ball rolling faster rather than slower, waiting for a report where we can actually trial it, as which Councillor Chadden mentioned before, that it's been sought, if you like, from that region or that community for the last, I don't know, probably 20 years. The initial costs, as I understand it, are less than 2,000 and catered for within the budget. So I believe there's no issues in finance on that. So on that basis, I will vote against it for those reasons. But intent is support of that motion. Councillor Percy, if you'd like to close debate.
Yeah, no, my only concern was the cost of doing this. As I said before, I don't think it's going to be much, but I still need to get a report back to know what that is and any potential risks. As you said, and everybody else said, the Kingston Beach Community Association have already expressed support for a trial, and they suggest that I put this forward. So I still stick with the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll ask councillors, move the recommendation moved by Councillor Percy, seconded by Councillor Chadden, a report be provided to council which assesses the feasibility of trialling one-way vehicle traffic on Osborne Esplanade north of Beach Road only. The report will include expected costs, possible timing for the trial, potential risks and other issues deemed relevant. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? I'll say no. So we'll have a divisional show of hands. Those in favour of the motion are Councillor Winter, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Percy, Councillor Chatterton, Councillor Fox, Councillor Berry and Councillor Atkinson and Reid, and opposing the motion is myself and Councillor Grace, and the motion is carried. We'll move on to page 16. Notice of motion submitted regarding council meeting records from Councillor Winter. You formally moved that. Do I
I'd
have
like
a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Winter.
Look, I don't have a lot to say except that I've always found it a bit curious that we actually go to the trouble of going onto the website and deleting minute and agenda records, which serves, that I can tell, no purpose whatsoever. So this actually cuts down on administration once the agenda and minutes are obviously put back up. The only thing I did question when I was doing this was whether how far back we should go. I went with this term of council for really not a lot of reasons, so I'd be happy if anyone had any other thoughts. But essentially, I'd like the council minutes and agendas and audio to stay on the website so that we, at any stage, member of the public can go back and refresh themselves of what happened, and particularly for the purpose of future debate and understanding the decisions we've made in the past. So hopefully this is supported.
Thank you, Councillor Chatterton.
I've got a question. When the council meeting is commenced and you as mayor, or the chair of the meeting, say in accordance with council policy, now is council policy, which I don't have before me, does it say in that council policy that it's only on the web for 12 months? If that is the case, we need a change of policy. I'm not opposing what Councillor Winter is trying to say, but all I'm saying is if it's contrary to the policy, we need to get the policy changed to do what Councillor Winter wants. It's no good making a motion before us if it's contrary to the policy. That's my question.
I understand where you're coming from. Mr. Mull, are you able to provide an answer?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, yes, I understand that the policy states that the items will stay on the website for a minimum of 6 months. That's my recollection of the policy, but I can clarify that.
That's the policy. Happy with that answer, Councillor Chadden?
Okay, give me a point. You're fine if that's what it says. But the only other technical thing is that when you open the meeting, you say it's on the council website for 12 months, and the public are aware of, and we as councillors are aware of that. And I think at the time when, because there was great debate of whether the meetings should or should not be audioed and recorded, and that was a hot potato at the time. Of the council at the time, and there were some people completely opposed to the recording of the council meetings, but you actually state that it's there for 12 months, but in Councillor Winter's motion, which I say I'm not saying I disagree with, it's going to be infinitum. So I'm wondering whether the recording should actually start from now, because you could actually stay, it's not there for 12 months, it's there to continue to stay on there. If you understand what I mean, we've already announced on each tape it'll be there for 12 months, right? But Councillor Winter's suggesting the start date be 2014. We can have the minutes on there for infinitum if we want to, as Councillor Winter quite correctly said, but I'm just wondering on a technicality whether we're not correct in allowing those minutes to be there for more than 12 months at this point in time.
I'll ask Mr. Malk to comment.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I think we can take that on notice, have a look at the whatever policies are in place, and ensure that what needs to be changed can be changed. But what I would say in all this debate is that whatever we do with the website, if we add more information, that we do need to have a decent search engine on there, because otherwise people are going to find it very difficult to navigate their way through the amount of information that will accumulate.
Councillor Fox.
Well, I guess this is another way of moving towards a paperless office, and I particularly support having access to previous agendas and minutes and audio recordings, because a lot of the decisions we make will affect this council and this community for the next 20 or 30 or 50 years, and people want to go back and look at the basis of those decisions that we've made. Likewise, a lot of decisions we're making now are based on, and a lot of the things we do are based on decisions that were made of maybe 30 years ago. I hope that these minutes and agendas are going to be available in the archives in a written form. Is that so?
Mr. Mark?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, that is the case. These are state government records, they're permanent records, and they do find their way into the state archives, and they are also searchable through Tahoe as well. It's a state archivist website.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Atkinson.
Thanks, Mayor. Just briefly, I'm in support of this. I think it's an important part of transparency of what council does and what council's decided. I think on the issue of how far back it goes, Councillor Winter has proposed a reasonably pragmatic position of saying meetings since the 2014 local government election. If it were easy to go back several more years, then I think there's value in that. One of the things that I find difficult as a councillor that's only been here since the 2014 local government election is that other councillors do have access to agendas and minutes of, you know, years and years, and in some cases decades and decades of agendas and minutes that I can only get during business hours by, you know, making a request to staff and saying, can you find me the, you know, where that was discussed. If I had access to those previous decisions and those previous discussions, it would help me do my job. A side issue to this is having access to the closed session agendas and minutes, and that's something we can discuss separately because it's not the issue of, you know, public access, and this is about public access, but I think this is important. And we've recently had it with people asking about the DAs to do with the work at the NEC on Bruni and me having to dig out the old agenda because it had already been taken off the website. So I think this is a good suggestion. I'll perhaps question the word indefinitely there, but I'll let it ride. It's a very long time, indefinite, but yeah, I'm fully in support of this motion. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Winder, if you'd like to close the vote.
Yeah, thanks. I understand Councillor Chatton's point about the minute recording being advised that they'll be up for 12 months. I think it's a good point. However, I can't imagine any circumstance where people would make comments knowing that they would be deleted in 12 months. So I think it is a good point that I didn't think of, but I think I'm comfortable. I suppose the other aspect is that in this notice of motion, I assumed that things like that particular wording would be changed because we had given that indication here, and that any relevant policies I couldn't find. I was looking for it on the website then, ironically I couldn't find it. So I assume that as part of this, that those things will be updated with the change in policy, but I think overall hopefully this is supported.
Thank you. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Winter, seconded by Councillor Fox. Council will make all public agendas, minutes and audio recordings from Council general meetings conducted since 2014, local government election, available on its website indefinitely. It will do the same with Council annual general meeting records, annual reports and any other important records deemed appropriate by staff. Councillors in favour of the recommendation, please say aye. Those to the contrary, motion is carried unanimously. Also on page 16, petition still being actioned, a report in response to the petition headed Petition Waste Collection for Kettering can be found on page 83 of this agenda. Petitions received in the last period, at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. The open session of council will now adjourn and the planning authority meeting will commence at 7:15. The first item is on page 18. Officers report on delegated authority for the period the 2nd of August through to the 15th of August 2017 and a recommendation on page 21. Moved by Councillor Chadden and seconded by Councillor Fox. Any questions or comments, councillors?
Just
Councillor Gross.
On page 18, development application for discretionary development use. I find this interesting and I like it. It's DA 2017 267, extension to existing dwelling, refitting an existing internal garage to accommodate two bedrooms and a bathroom and construct a rumpus room. Well, you know, that can be done under discretionary, which I think is all right, but some of the things, like a small adjustment on an envelope or something like that, takes 7 months. Why can't that be more simpler?
I don't know whether it was a question or a comment. I'll ask Mrs. Tyler Moore just to respond, please.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I believe that this matter that's been referred to by Councillor Grace is to do with amending a building envelope that's registered on a title, not to be confused with the building envelopes we refer to which make applications discretionary. So, unfortunately, it's just the way the scheme's written, talking about building envelopes. So if you build higher than, or you build a closer than the 1.5 metre setback that's allowed, then that's talked about being outside the building envelope. The building envelope that Councillor Grace is referring to was a building envelope registered on title, and that particular application required further information. It required it to be registered by the applicant with the titles office. The applicant themselves caused delays in providing their further information to be registered on the title, and there were delays in council as well. So you can't compare the two. They're completely different processes and matters and under different regulations.
Well, yes, I understand that fully, Mayor, but what I'm saying is, simplify, if I can. I'm not arguing about this refitting and all that stuff. That's okay. But I'm saying if there's an envelope, whatever you call it, A or 1 or whatever, that's okay, but somebody lodges a building application and that's 300 mil outside the envelope, why has it taken 7 months to fix?
I thought that had just been responded.
Yeah, why couldn't it be approved and then go back to the lands and title to be marked on after?
Because I think that's the process. Yes, I'm getting nodded, that's the process. No further comments or questions. On that basis, I'll put the recommendation by Councillor Chadden, seconded by Councillor Fox, that the report be noted. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? It's carried unanimously. The next item is on page 22, and it's a development application for extension to an existing dwelling and works in the common property at Unit 5, 78 Davies Road, Lower Snug, for Taurus Construction. And there is a recommendation on page 30, And at 7:20, Councillor Atkinson has left the meeting.
Your move.
Thank you, Councillor Grace.
Second.
I'm just trying to get over here and find my paperwork. Yep, seconder. Councillor Percy. Councillor Grace.
I don't have an issue with it, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Percy.
Yeah, I just got a question on page 25, 2.4 zone, clause 12.2, use table. It says there that it's going to be, it's been assessed in accordance with 9.1 of the scheme, which relates to change to existing non-conforming use. Does that mean that this non-conforming use was allowed under a different plan or scheme? Or I'm just wondering what the situation is when there's non-conforming uses, existing ones, I should say. Because the problem is that something is allowed previously and then that becomes the norm, that's all. So I'll just perhaps
get a... Thank you. I'll ask Mrs. Tyler Moore if she can confirm that for you.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I believe that it relates to that it was developed under a previous planning scheme which it was allowed under, and it is a change to existing non-conforming use that the multiple dwellings are on that one parcel.
Thank you. Further comments, questions? Then I'll put the recommendation. Moved by Councillor Chatterton, seconded by Councillor Percy. Sorry, Councillor Grace. All right. And he spoke too, didn't he? That the Planning Authority resolves that the report of the Manager Development Service be received and that the development application for extension to existing dwelling at Unit 5, 78 Davies Road and associated common property, Lower Snug for tourist construction, be approved, subject to the following conditions, and as you can see, there are six conditions. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried by all except for Councillor Atkinson, who is out of the room. The next item is on page 36, and it's a development application for a dwelling at 11 Admiral Court, Blackmans Bay, for Smeeks Drafting Proprietor Limited, and there is a recommendation on page 51. Thank you, Councillor Grace. Thank you, Councillor Reid. And for the record, looks like Councillor Atkinson is returning at 7:22.
The building exceeded.
Councillor Grace, wish to speak to the motion?
Well, I haven't got any issues. I was gratefully explained the issue I had today by our planner, manager, and I'm happy with that. I do know now there's a difference between envelopes. I knew there was a white one and a brown one, but I wasn't quite sure with the...
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Any further discussion, councillors? Councillor Berry, do you...
Well, I just had a question. That was all. I didn't understand. On page 43, there is second paragraph. The impact proposal is to do with loss of sunlight, but in italics, three, overshadowing of an adjoining vacant lot is therefore not unreasonable. What does that mean?
Just waiting for Mrs. Tyler Moore to find it on page 43 and then she'll respond for you.
Does that mean it is therefore reasonable? I mean, there are two negatives.
Mrs. Tyler Moore?
Three things, Mr. Mayor. Sorry, I had to read the paragraph. It's not that clearly written. It's suggesting that the overshadowing that will occur is not unreasonable. It's not excessive.
I mean, it's reasonable.
Then it's reasonable.
Why don't we say that?
Councillor Chatterton.
Yes, I was just rather interested in somewhere in the report I read where one of the neighbours who was objecting, part of their objection was that they were told the building could be wouldn't be two storey on the end of the blocks, and I note the planner has said there's no covenants on the titles or anything, which is rather interesting because I know someone else was interested in buying a block up there, and they were told by I don't know to whom, whether it's the owner of the subdivision or whatever, but they could not build a double storey place, and that seems to be what the neighbour in this other cul-de-sac, which I think is Wednesday Court by the looks of things, has been told the same thing. So it's interesting that this person walked away from buying a block because they couldn't build double storey, yet it's, as alluded to in the report, that is not correct and it's not on any of the titles.
Mm-hmm. Further discussion, councillors? Otherwise, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Grace, seconded by Councillor Reid, that the Planning Authority resolves that the report of the Manager Development Services be received and that the development application for dwelling at 11 Admiral Court, Blackmans Bay, for Smeek's Drafting Proprietary Limited be approved, subject to the following conditions. And as you can see, there are six conditions. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. The next item is on page 62, and that, as you've seen today from your email, has been withdrawn and will be presented, I believe, at the next council meeting in 2 weeks' time. The next item, or the open session of council now, will resume at 7:26. An officer's report, and the first one is a petition for waste collection for Kettering, and there is a recommendation on page 85. Have a mover and seconder, Councillor Berry. Did I see Councillor Bastone with her arm in the air? As a seconder. Thank you. Councillor Berry.
I don't have a lot to say. I mean, the recommendation is very clear about the organiser of the petition being notified. It's forming one of the recommendations in the final waste management strategy, and B, the majority support of affected residents. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. Further discussion, councillors? Councillor Winter?
I just wanted to ask if we had any ideas at the moment about how recommendation B, the majority support of affected residents, how are we going to measure that support? What survey mechanism, for example, would we be using to find that out?
Previously, it was done on a return by property owners, and that weighting, I think, had to be 60%, and I think it's now been reduced to 50%+. So it's done on a majority-minority.
So it's a postal?
I'm not sure whether it's postal or how it is, but yes, it's a...
Right.
It was postal previously.
Okay. So previously it's been done by the post. Okay, well, that sounds fairly reasonable way forward. Good enough for the plebiscite. Good enough for this. Thanks.
All right, we'll move on to Councillor Atkinson. Right.
That's really just a follow-up question to that. The motion says majority support of affected residents, and your answer then was that it was owners. Is it residents or owners that we survey?
I assume it was residents, and I misset owners.
So it is actually residents. It's
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I'm
well,
not sure. I'm
I think it's quite important, isn't it?
I'm looking for Mr. Ferrier whether he can recall from earlier days.
Majority support. What's, Mayor, are you ready for me or is Jeff?
No, we've got a question. Mm. And we don't know the answer. Sorry.
Did you hear the question? These computers are so distracting, aren't they?
Doing this tomorrow's work.
It was in part B. It's just the majority support of affected residents, and Councillor Winter was asking about how we decide that, and the Mayor responded that we survey owners. I wanted to know: is it ratepayers, owners, residents? Who do we ask the majority of?
Mr. Ferrier.
No pressure.
When we've surveyed, for example, on Bruny Island, everybody on the island, we've surveyed all the owners of land. So we've used our records for mail outs.
Yeah. Okay.
So we've used owners.
Yeah. So the motion shouldn't say support affected residents. It should say affected owners.
Well, it's easier to mail out to owners. We don't necessarily know the residents.
Okay.
Yep.
So it looks like I was correct first time.
Yep, so the wording of the motion is incorrect, is what we're saying.
Yes.
Yep.
So,
and if the mover and the second would like to change it, the word residents will become owners.
Yes.
Yep. Thank you.
I've got a yes from one. Yes, from the other.
Should we debate what we should do?
Well, the owners are the ones that get the bill.
Yeah.
The owners get the bill.
Exactly.
True. Councillor Grace.
Well, I'm sort of a bit of a loss. The organisers of the petition are notified that the provisions of the waste and recycling services to Ketron will depend on. I've been out of touch a bit. So I noticed we're doing a waste management strategy. So this strategy could take 3 to 4 months to complete. Is that something in that order, would it?
Well, the most important thing there is whether or not the strategy, it's recommended in the strategy as well.
Well, that's what I can't... if we do the strategy and then we turn around and say, OK, we're going to do the service ourselves.
If we're then going to do the service, then we seek the majority support of the affected owners.
Right, so that will then come back to council.
That's correct, and it would also go to the owners for their yes or no.
Right, so that's okay, because as long as that comes back to council, so we've got a figure, if it's what I can hear, that a lot of people are not for it, so if it comes back with a negative, well then we won't undertake the role.
As previous locations.
Okay, thank you.
And of course the first one, it has to be identified in the strategy that's an item that wishes to be carried on.
Yeah, that's
right. I've got no one else. Anyone? Councillor Bastow. Sorry, didn't see your light there behind the jug.
I know. Sad position to be in here. I'm just pointing out that, in fact, it says residents all the way through, and I just hope it's going to be changed to owners in all cases.
The motion is owners.
That's the end, but in the conclusion, consultation with residents... affected residents.
It'll be the owners.
It'll be the owners.
Yes, that's the motion.
Yeah, but just clarify that the report doesn't change, does it? It's only the motion that's changing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the word owners takes precedence over the word residents. Any further discussion, councillors? Councillor Berry, I don't think you said much at the beginning, and I've probably got nothing to say at the end, have you? Okay. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Berry, seconded by Councillor Bastone, that the organisers of the petition are notified that the provision of a waste and recycling service at Ketron will be dependent on A, this forming one of the recommendations in the final waste management strategy, and B, the majority support of affected owners. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? It's carried unanimously. The next item is on page 86. And it's capital budget adjustments, and there is a recommendation on page 88. Thank you, Councillor Fox. And thank you, Councillor Percy.
Can I ask a question?
You've got a question.
Beach Road, Margate, it says, you know, we called tenders and we didn't go ahead with the job, et cetera, without going through each paragraph. And because of Taz Water, whatever. Well, I tried to get down there 3 times and I haven't been able to get down there because of the works that's going on down in Beach Road. And I have nothing against the works going on, neither. But what I'm asking is, I thought that we let tenders for the Esplanade only. I wasn't aware that there was more works going on up Beach Road, up as far as almost the Bundella Road at this moment. We shelved that, remember? There was tenders came in and council decided not to go ahead. So, and I'm told, and I only found this out the other day, that there's 2 different contractors down there.
Thank you, Councillor Grace.
So can I...
I'll ask Mr. Loxley, if he can update us all, please.
Through the mayor, sorry. The tender went for the Esplanade and Beach Road up to Bundella was a joint tender that was put out and awarded by council. It is one contractor doing both projects, and then the second set of works is a Tas Water contractor who's put in the sewer rise in Main, and he's concentrating his works up at the beginning just off the Channel Highway, and that section of the road.
Thank you, Mr. Lodger. Councillor Percy.
Thanks very much.
As mover of the motion, I had my light on.
Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry, I didn't see it. Councillor Forrest,
you go for it.
Sorry, I just feel that this is an appropriate thing to be doing, and it's all a matter of being adjustable and being capable of moving with the opportunity and being able to be flexible, I mean. So I do think we should do this, take up this project while the opportunity is there, and I don't think the Brightwater Road deferral is going to make a big difference to that particular project. And also the resealing of Woodbridge Road I think can be deferred, and I think it's better to take this opportunity in Margate. That's been deferred for so many years, and it would be so good to see that happening. And obviously the cost of water to the sports centre is much reduced by this other proposal, so I think we should support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Percy.
Yeah, I agree with Councillor Fox. This certainly seems like a practical solution to get it done at this time. Just to put on record, I suppose, I asked a question today of Council of what was the written down value of assets that we're going to have to get rid of by doing this, Beach Road Margate, and it's come back with a $309,000 cost, which, as I said in the email, will go straight to our bottom underlying deficit for this year. So it's, we've got a budget in there of $600,000, but $309,000 is going to hit it pretty hard. But I just noticed in 4.1 it says the rehabilitation Beach Road Margate from Bundella Channel Highway has previously been designed and is estimated to cost approximately $650,000. Now, the reason why we're writing off $309,000 is the reason for the large base write down is the need for part of the base layer to be reconstructed due to its current poor quality. And I'm just wondering whether, if we previously said it was going to be $650,000 for Beach Road, to reconstruct, is that going to cost us more money, or has that already been included in the construction of the base? Thank you.
Mr. Loxley.
Through the Mayor. We tendered the same package a couple of years ago, and it was actually $750,000 the tender came in for. But this, we're hoping to capitalise on the fact that Tas Water will be resurfaced in a section half the road, so we believe we can do it for around $650,000. But that would be tendered.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes, Councillor Gross.
Okay, because I beg your pardon, I didn't read this properly. Well, this here tonight will allow us to do the whole of Beach Road up to Channel Highway. Well, what tenders are we using? Because we didn't accept any tenders. The tenders come forward, and if I remember rightly, Bachelor was the lowest tender, and there was some conflict with whatever took place, and I believe it was then we didn't accept any tender. So what are we doing? We've got $650,000. Are we going back to tender?
Mr. Arnold?
That's my question.
Mr. Arnold?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Grace, just before the recommendation on page 88 at 8.2, it says Beach Road project has been designed and would only need to be tendered for construction to commence.
It's all right, Councillor Gross. Councillor Fox, would you like to close the vote?
Close, thank you.
Thank you, councillors. I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Percy, that council defer Brightwater Road renewal, $495,000. And up to $250,000 of road sealing projects to allow Beach Road Margate and the rationalisation of water connections for the Kingborough Sports Precinct to form part of the 2017-18 Capital Works Program. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against, that is carried unanimously. Councillors, would you like a break? I'll go on to page 89, Sustainable Industry Growth Plan for the Salmon Industry, a report there from Mr. Dool, and a recommendation on page 90. Thank you, Councillor Percy. Did I have a seconder? Thanks, Dave. All right, thank you, Councillor Chadwick. And for the record being 7:40, Councillor Gross has left the meeting. Councillor Percy.
No, I'll just take the recommendation from Mr. Dool that it's not necessary, so thank you.
Any debate, councillors? Councillor Berry?
Can I just ask a question? As we're being asked as council, is that right? Is a council to comment on this?
We've been invited to comment if we wanted to.
Okay.
And Mr. Dool has come back to say that suggests that we don't make a submission. Yep.
My question is, what responsibility does council have with the industry? As far as I'm aware, we have absolutely no control whatsoever about what happens on the water.
And that's...
Is that correct?
Yes, and I believe that's the reason behind
the only thing we have any control over is land-based. I don't want to kind of make an issue out of it, but how come we're authorities on stuff we have no control over, and why are we being asked our opinion about it?
I would imagine because I'd say a mailing went out to all and sundry, and we were one of the sundries. That's my belief.
That may be your imagining, Ms. Mayor. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Fox?
I think there is a joint authority which Mr. Dool is on, which is to do with the aquaculture industry. I was at a workshop on Thursday night, I think, in Blackmans Bay, where there are about 27 people. The report from that workshop's being compiled at the moment, and it was to try and work out concerns in the community about the aquaculture industry, both in the past and the present and the future. It's an absolutely massive issue. It's very controversial. It's affecting our waterways, the noise pollution, light pollution, etc., as well as providing jobs, of course. But it does affect a lot of people in this community, and I'm surprised that we're not making submissions of concern rather than saying, yes, it's agreeing that it's a sustainable industry. Because that is questionable. I guess it's a sustainable industry growth plan for the salmon industry, but we're noting that, and we're not making a submission, but maybe we should either be not noting it or we should be making a submission.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Mr. Jewell, do you want to respond, please?
Thank you, through you, Mayor. I think the attitude I was taking was that we do have very little control over the industry, so by not making a submission, we're not saying we totally agree with every aspect of this. I think what we have tried to do, though, as you say, we're part of the Dontricasto-Huon collaboration, where we work with TASAL and Huon Aquaculture on that group, so we're in the room with them regularly and we do try and work with them. And I've got a report going up to the next council meeting where TASAL is forming community consultative groups in the three regions of Tasmania, and they're going to establish one for Dontricasto-Huon. And we've been invited as staff to be on that, but also in the report I will be saying, would you like to nominate a councillor to be part of that group as well? So the attitude I've taken is that trying to be in the room and working constructively, I couldn't really see the point in having it's a very high level document. I couldn't see the point in making a submission one way or the other, so I thought it was just better to keep working at the level we are.
Thank you, Mr. Dole. Any further discussion? Councillor Fox.
Well, how do we know how we're working? Do these reports come back to council? Do we get regular feedback from the issues that are being discussed and the issues are being raised as a council?
Mr. Dill.
Through you, Mayor. Well, the collaboration, we report back in our Environmental Services quarterly report. We give an update on those. But as I say, the consultative group for TASL, which is the most relevant one to us, as I said, I would hope there would be a councillor on that group. So that's what the invitation relates to.
Thank you. Further discussion, councillors?
So I did just ask a question.
Certainly, Councillor Berry.
I do have a bit of a difficulty. I'm no expert on the sustainable growth of the salmon industry. I think I'm being asked my opinion about that. I don't know enough about it to agree to that. I mean, I think what Mr. Dill said about a report from the Dauntercastle collaboration is something that I'd have a lot of interest in and be very supportive of. But I can't support this because I don't know enough about it to actually agree with or disagree that it's a great idea. I mean, I've got a personal view that maybe it'd be a good idea if a bit more land-based fish growing went on. I know that there are a component of the industry is land-based, but that is the way that I understand the salmon industry is going in the Northern Hemisphere. But I'm not capable of expressing an opinion, so for that reason only, I won't be supporting this.
Thank you. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Percy, seconded by Councillor Chatton, that Council notes the draft sustainable industry growth plan for the salmon industry and does not make a submission on its contents. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? We'll have a division or a show of hands, please. Those in favour are Councillors Winter, Bastone, Percy, Chatterton, Reet and Moss, and opposing that is Councillor Fox, Councillor Berry and Councillor Atkinson. Motion is carried. The next item is on page 91, proposed Kingston Park development. A report there from Mr. Ferrier. And pardon? Thank you. Now let me find it on page 100. So we have a mover in Councillor Chatton and a seconder in Councillor Bastone. And for the record, at 7:43, Councillor Percy left the meeting. Councillor Chatton?
Well, first of all, I thank Mr. Ferrier for his comprehensive report and also for the Communications and Community Engagement Strategy report, which flows on from pages 101 onwards. And part C of this motion actually has that particular report or community strategy going on the website, which would be fantastic. Has the implementation report also been placed on the website. And what it's doing is actually making sure that the public are aware of what plans and implementations we have for that site. And I think the more people we can take with us on that journey, the better the project will be in the long term. It's updating us on where we are and what and success of the grant application, which we got the 2.5, if my memory serves me correctly, and how that's been spent. And we're getting ready to go out to tender on the community hub. All that information's in the report. It's laying out the pathway from now of where we're going to go. And of course, there'd be other things which we need to discuss, as particularly on the land release. That's something we further plan to discuss. I know we have consultants advising us on that front, but that's something which we need to get more advice on prior to that. But obviously, the first step is that we've got to get that integrated, or whatever we want to call it, integrated health centre, or whatever it is now, underway for the public's benefit. We need to get the boulevard underway that we need to actually get our hands on officially on the site and pay some money and then get the community hub underway. So all those things are needing to happen, and Mr. Ferry has laid out all information on that in this report, and I thank him for that.
Thank you, Councillor Chadden. Further speaker, Councillor Atkinson.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. A series of questions. Particularly some things, if I can find them, bear with me for a second. On page 95, it talks about the land release strategy, and in 4.21 it says it's being recommended that the future land sale process involve a post-pre-sales approach, which we've discussed in a workshop. Has that been decided, or is that something that will be coming to council? How will that decision be made?
Mr. Ferrier?
Through the chair, the Nevaya consultants haven't provided us with the final land release strategy. That land release strategy, which has been discussed with councillors in a workshop, will be the subject of a separate report, and council can choose to adopt that report, and that will endorse that post-pre-sales approach.
Thank you. I should actually preface this by some of those things I've asked Mr. Ferrier outside of the meeting already, but I just wanted to get some of them on the record. In 4.28, it talks about parking being provided to the rear of the buildings and sufficient parking provided to cater for the health centre's needs. And I think our previous parking strategy said that there was 20 years of parking available in central Kingston already. How are we taking that into account in what parking we provide in Kingston Park?
Mr. Ferrier?
Through the chair, that paragraph 4.28 deals with the parking for the Kingston Health Centre, and the health centre itself will be providing its own parking. Separate to that, the development plan for the site provides for other parking on the site, which includes all day parking and also timed parking. It's fair to say that there won't be as much parking as there currently is on that site for all day parking, but that's something that we'll need to resolve on an ongoing basis. But certainly the parking within the Kingston Park site will be sufficient to meet its needs, plus extra.
So we're going to have more than 20 years parking available by the time that's finished?
I can't comment on as to how many years available we might have, but certainly the parking within the Kingston Park site will be sufficient to cover
it. All right, so we're treating it separately from the parking of the overall Kingston parking?
Obviously it all has to be treated together. I mean, a big feature of the Kingston Park site is that it's, you know, we are planning for how it relates to the rest of central Kingston. The parking strategy that was done a year or two ago determined that there was plenty of timed parking within Kingston. What we've got is all-day parking, but a lot of that all-day parking is temporary parking on the Kingston Park site, and we certainly won't be providing that same level of all-day parking on the Kingston Park site. So we do have some form of a challenge for council to look at where else all-day parking might be provided in Kingston, but it won't necessarily be in the centre of Kingston. It won't necessarily be on the Kingston Park site.
You're right, thank you. On page 97, at the bottom of 5.3, it says expected the interest-free loan will be repaid from the settlement of the first stage of the land sale in 22-23. Am I reading that right, that the first land sales will be in 22-23?
That's correct, yes. I think that's when we're expecting, particularly when we're looking at a pre-sales approach, when we're actually going to get some revenue back from the sales at the, about that time.
Okay.
I just check that John agrees with me. Yes.
Yep. Thank you. Jumping on to page 119, if I can find it. I wish I had a paper copy, I could find it quicker. It talks about the. Let's find the spot. Now, first paragraph says the second stage is not expected to be constructed for a few more years. How long's a few more years? Do we have any indication of what that means, or is that just a? It's sort of, we're not really sure at this stage.
Mr. Ferrier.
Oh, sorry. Page 119, and it's the top of the page there. It says
talking about the proposal for the boulevard construction in two stages. It said there'd be construction of the road from Freeman Street roundabout through to the northern corner.
Mr. Ferry, you don't have your light on. Sorry.
Sorry. I'll start again. The we've been deliberately vague on that because we'd like to think that we can construct that second stage of the road fairly soon. But I think there's also the issues of being able to obtain some revenue from the land sales, that might sort of slow that construction down. We also need to consider how we might or when we would like to upgrade the Channel Highway out the front of the Civic Centre here, and it would probably be advisable to have completed the boulevard construction prior to actually doing the work in the Channel Highway. So there's a number of different influences as to when we actually do that second stage. It is probably a few years away, but I can't be any more precise than that at this stage.
Oh, thank you. And jumping back slightly, the top of page 118, and this one I asked you about in detail, the diagram there has some very specific things in about the removal of pedestrian crossings and changing to intersections and things. And am I right? You indicated to me previously that they were just indicative from a previous report and they weren't solid plans. Is that correct?
Yeah, through the chair. That diagram has been in the public domain in the past in previous reports to council. It does indicate there, for example, that there'd be traffic lights at the corner of Hutchins and the Channel Highway, and that has been the view for a number of years, I guess, that would probably be the likely scenario. But the intention is that we will be doing some more traffic analysis and traffic studies that might revise that. So I guess Councillor Atkins is correct in sort of saying that, you know, what we're indicating in that diagram may not actually happen. It's probably likely to happen, but it's not confirmed at this particular point in time, and it would come back to council for decisions to be made as to what needs to happen, what's going to be happening, or how the section of the Channel Highway is going to be designed in future. So that diagram is purely indicative, and it's really trying just to show how the roads within the Kingston Park site are integrated with the other roadworks that are likely to occur in the rest of central Kingston.
Yeah, thank you, because I guess the reason I'm raising it is that this is a document we're going to put out on the website as a public document, and I don't want the community to be misled as to what our plans are, but you've made it clear as to the status of that drawing. The other two, on page 122 and page 124, there are those three-dimensional diagrams or mock-ups showing buildings and so on, and we had a bit of discussion about whether those building heights are representative. You know, some of those are sort of three or maybe four storey, whether that's really what we think will happen or what sort of heights we're expecting to see there.
Mr. Ferry?
Through the chair, that diagram is, I suppose whenever you put a diagram in which sort of provides you with some sort of image as to what's likely to happen on the site, there's always the pros and cons of doing that. The disadvantages in putting something in is that if we end up building something which is different to it, then people sort of criticise us because it's not exactly what they expected. But then if you don't put something in, then people still have their own possible misconceptions as to what's going to happen on the site anyway. So I think you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. By including diagrams, it does at least give some impression. This is a particular diagram which was in the original development plan. It probably still indicates generally what we expect to happen on that site. And as a Councillor Atkinson's saying, maybe the heights might be slightly different, and we may be seeking to go another story or two higher than what's shown on there in some parts of those buildings. But I think that's something that we can communicate. That's one of the benefits in having this particular document out there in the public domain. We can communicate the reasons why we might be wanting to change some of the previous plans that we've released. Certainly this particular picture is a number of years old now, and I think it's probably good to have something in a report which actually shows how we might retain this or how we might change it. This report will go out on a quarterly basis, so you know, I'd like to think that if the public are paying attention, that they can actually sort of see why we might be making it different decisions and how that's occurring or how it's being presented by way of different diagrams. So this is, it's purely indicative. I guess there's benefits in including pictures and diagrams because it communicates better than words, and that's purely why it's in there.
Yeah, thank you, and I sympathise with the indicative diagrams. I didn't pick out dogs not on leads or lack of accessibility ramps or anything there, but no, thank you for that.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. And for the record, Councillor Percy returned during those questions at 7:49. Any further discussions, councillors? If not, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Chadden, seconded by Councillor Bastone, that A, the report on the current progress of Kingston Park site development project be noted, B, the Kingston Park implementation report be placed on Council's website for public perusal, and that this be updated every 3 months in order that current relevant information is available on the project, and C, the Kingston Park communications and community engagement strategy also be made publicly available on Council's website. Councillors, I'll ask you to vote. Those in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. It's 8 o'clock and Councillor Winter has left the meeting. Information reports on page 133. If I can have a mover and a seconder. Thank you, Councillor Percy. And thank you, Councillor Fox. First one is the Mayor's communications, and I'd like to thank Councillor Fox and Councillor Percy for attending the intergenerational Christmas in July, and for Councillor Fox to welcome and thank the people on the day. So thank you for that. And I got a response that it was a good day. The next item is the audit panel independent chairman.
I had one question about that.
Sorry, yes?
Because only just for my interest, you had a citizenship ceremony on the 24th of July with one conferee and then another one on the 2nd of August with 27. I wondered how we decide the dates for those and why we had a ceremony of one.
The ceremony of one was after the dates were set.
Okay.
And the person had a medical issue that couldn't attend the other.
Right, date. Okay. Yeah, no, thank you.
And also on that too, there was one done at Blunston Arena and for number 7, and that was at 5:30 on Friday the 28th of July, which was actually interesting and quite enjoyable.
Mayor, is it true that sometimes the applicants ask for a private ceremony too, do they not?
They do at times, yes. I did one of those when Councillor Berry was away some time ago, and I'm sure he would have done one or two of those.
Well, they were all private for a while when I was mayor.
No further questions in relation to the mayor's activities or communications. We'll move on to the audit panel independent chairman's report, which starts on page 138, which is a fairly comprehensive report and gives us a good up to date there. And Councillor Percy.
Yeah, I think I probably should just say that Council should be pleased with the outcomes from the audit panel. The independent members are, with Chairman Mick Burrows, are very experienced and focused on the requirements of the panel. And the audit panel works closely with the internal auditors, and which is why WLF Accounting Advisory and also TAS Audit Office. So I'd just like to thank the Council officers for assisting with the audit panel as well. Yeah.
Thank you, Councillor Percy. Councillor Atkinson?
I just, agree with everything Councillor Percy said. He said it well. I think it's worth drawing attention to page 141 and talking about project management and the comments that internal auditors made about project management, and it's good to see that they've made some recommendations, which I believe Council's acted on, particularly around management of our largest project being Kingston Park, and that should give, hopefully, people more confidence that the project will be managed well and will be successful.
Thank you. The next item is the Kingborough Council, the July 2017 financial report, starting at page 147. Councillor Percy.
Not much this time. Too early in the season. Probably depreciation's the only thing I need a little bit of advice on. 10% revaluation in the buildings, and also 3.7% revaluation of infrastructure assets. Just wondering where those percentages come to. And I'm just wondering, I think we've done a forecast of 150,000 for depreciation to year end. I'm just wondering how has this figure been checked? Because I'm just wondering where it's going to be enough. I think last year we kept on changing depreciation up just about every month that we had a report. I'm just wondering whether this looks like the final figure, or will it come out a lot more? Because just my quick calculations seems to think that maybe we're going to get hit a bit harder.
Mr. Brain?
Through the chair, I guess at this stage that's our best estimate. Given that we're early into the new financial year, we got some July figures out of the new asset master system. The other thing we are doing at the moment is estimating the impacts of a fairly substantial work in progress item that we have that will have an impact on depreciation as those assets get capitalised throughout the year. So there's a certain element of estimates involved in the numbers. I'm hopeful it'll be around about that sort of mark.
And if you could comment on those percentages that you used too, please.
Okay, just in regards to those, the 10% revaluation on buildings occurred throughout the year, last financial year, and had an impact on last year's result, which has flowed on through this year. Infrastructure at a bit over 3%, 3.7%. We budget for a 3% increase year on year, so we get increases sort of marginally over. They do have an impact.
I'm just querying where the figures, the 3.7, is that an industry average or something? I'm not quite sure. Municipal figure? It's obviously not CPI, so I just wondering if you had an exact, where that figure comes from, what data you used to get it.
Right. We rely on a company called, I think it's ETSO, who do our provide us with our revaluations, and the 3.7% is a result of the movements over the past 2 years and the expected movements in the next 12 months. So they provide us with a number, and we use a 3-year moving average.
Councillor Fox.
There's some very fine printing on page 149 at the top of the page where it says reserves and then below that held in trust. I'm just wondering, I presume reserves is money that we've got in reserve for projects that have been committed. Correct me if I'm wrong, but why have we got 1.418 held in trust? And what's it for?
That is... balances where people have given us funds for works. Is that correct, Mr. Brown?
Yes, through the chair, that is correct. It's generally there are building works, and we hold the funds until the works are completed, and then we refund the monies.
Seems a really large amount, though.
It's a lot of work.
Okay, thank you.
Good question. Further questions? If not, we'll move on to the minutes of the Kingborough Road Safety Committee, which was held on the 25th of July. July starts at 1:54. Any questions or comments? Anything you would like to add, Councillor Chadden?
The only comment, Mayor, would be referring to page 156, where the staff are going to look at... what we could do as far as the road safety grants are concerned, and the committee's recommended that they believe a new speed trailer would be a way to go, and that would, we believe, would fit within the 25,000 upper grant limit. Mr. Reeve has undertaken to investigate that further. I haven't heard any more from Mr. Reeve on that, but also as it says, they would suggest we contact the Huon Valley Council, and I spoke to the general manager of the Huon Valley Council at the Legat conference, as a matter of fact, on the subject, and asked him to talk to Mr. Reeve further on that to see whether there was something we could jointly do if needed under road safety, because I mean anybody that goes to the Huon has to come through Kingborough, so it's logical to me that you know, if there's a road safety issue, we should be looking at it as a regional southern region south of Hobart, and seeing whether or not there's something there that needs to be applied for a grant as well. So the general manager of Huon Valley was going to talk to Mr. Reeve further on that.
Thank you. No further questions, comments. We'll move on to the Destination Southern Tasmania Summit report from Councillor Percy, who attended. Any questions to Councillor Percy? Anything you would like to add, Councillor Percy? They didn't sign you up for a episode or two of the Kettering Incident or Rose Haven while you were there? Oh, that's bad luck. All right, we'll go back to page 133. I have a motion moved by Councillor Percy, seconded by Councillor Fox, that the following information reports be noted. 1. Mayor's communications. 2. Council audit panel. 3. Financial report July. 4. The Kingborough Road Safety Minutes and the Destination Southern Tasmania Summit 2017. I'll ask councillors to vote. Those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Is carried unanimous by those present. The next page is page 176, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. There are two items, the first and the third, and I think the middle one can be deleted. Okay. So those that have got three have got one. So thank you, Councillor Percy, and thank you, Councillor Atkinson, that in accordance to Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meetings Procedures Regulation, the following items to be dealt with in closed session: application for leave of absence, Taruna Fire Station lease. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against, is carried unanimously. The next item, that in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulation, that Council move into closed session. Thank you, Councillor Chatton. Thank you, Councillor Percy. I'll put that to the vote. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously by those of us here. In accordance with Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recording Guidelines, policy recording of the open session of Council will now cease, and the open session